You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, How to Turn Your Independent Film into a Money-Making Business by Alex Ferrari. For a free copy of the audiobook, head over to www.filmbizbook.com.
The Director Series is made possible by the support of our subscribers on Special. Subscribe today at special.tv/The Director Series and gain access to exclusive full-length Director Series episodes and other bonus content, ad-free. Welcome to the Director Series podcast, a show dedicated to deconstructing the work of some of cinema's most celebrated and influential film directors. I'm your host, Cameron Bile.
Upon completing high school, both Joel and Ethan went on to study at Bard College in Massachusetts. From there, Ethan went on to Princeton, while Joel went to New York University and made the short film Soundings, a project that marked the beginning of a serious pursuit of professional filmmaking. After graduation, Joel found work as a production assistant on various industrial films and music videos, working his way deeper into the industry until he landed a gig as an assistant editor on a feature film for an enterprising young director. That director was Sam Raimi. The film was 1981's iconic cult hit, The Evil Dead. Raimi proved an invaluable ally when it came time for the Coens to develop their own feature, a violent Western neo-noir hybrid titled Blood Simple. The title came from a term coined by novelist Dashiell Hammett, used to describe the addled and fearful mindset people are prone to fall into after becoming involved in a violent situation. The Coens felt it a fitting title to bestow on their inky crime thriller about the fatal consequences of infidelity and miscommunication, whose tone took a page from the Raimi playbook by blending lurid pulp and violence with touches of sardonic humor. The existence of Blood Simple owes a lot to Raimi's mentorship. In the absence of any connections to studio money, Raimi convinced Joel and Ethan to create a 2-minute pitch trailer for the film, featuring the Evil Dead star Bruce Campbell as a man pulling his bloody and broken body along a desolate stretch of highway. The Coens then went door to door, showing neighbors their pitch trailer in the comfort of their own homes, and within a year, they had raised roughly half of their $1.5 million budget, enough to begin production. In the fall of 1982, Joel and Ethan began production of the first feature film, shooting in the Austin and Hutto areas of Texas over the ensuing 8 weeks.
You shouldn't have taken the fucking money. Look at me, man, I'm serious. You broke in the bar and you ripped off the fucking safe. Abby warned me about you. You know what your problem is? You're too fucking obvious. The only two people with the combination are you and me, and Abby, maybe. These fucking things are nothing but coffin nails.
Blood Simple illustrates a signature Coen storytelling trope, whereby they take a basic story and layer in a series of plot twists and genre homages to create a wholly original work. While the film's story is morbid and dark, the brothers openly acknowledge the sheer absurdity of their scenario and their characters, without playing them for laughs. So too does the cast, who wholly embrace the material and make it even funnier with their convincing stone-faced performances. For the central role of Abby, the housewife whose affair with her husband's employee kicks off a series of violent turns, the Coens initially wanted Holly Hunter. She wasn't available, but she knew someone who could knock it out of the park. Her roommate, Frances McDormand. If only the Coens could have known then how profoundly this fateful little development would shape their professional and personal lives. Not only would McDormand's debut performance here mark the beginning of a highly accomplished acting career, it would also lead directly to her marriage to Joel in 1984.
You're not even acting like yourself. First, you call me 5 in the a.m. saying all kind of nice things on the phone, and then you come charging in here, scaring me half to death without even telling me what I'm supposed to be scared of.
McDormand's performance in Blood Simple is a highly memorable one, with a relaxed femininity and a syrupy Texan drawl belying a cunning intelligence and a superhuman ability to keep it together under extreme stress. Her character goes against the grain of the era's gender archetypes, and a razor-tense showdown with M. Emmett Walsh's antagonist character at the film's climax serves as a great showpiece for the salty courage and determination that McDormand can convey.
Where are you going?
See a guy.
Ray, don't go to the bar. I know him. It ain't a good idea.
I just gotta see a guy.
As Abby's lover and aimless barkeep Ray, John Getz doesn't get a lot to say, but his soulful eyes speak volumes about the character.
What are you smiling at? I'm funny, right? I'm an asshole? No, 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 no. That's not what's funny. What's funny is her. What's funny is that I had you two following. Because if it's not you she's sleeping with, it's someone else. And what's really going to be funny is when she gives you that innocent look and says, I don't know what you're talking about, Ray. I ain't done anything funny.
The opposite goes for Dan Hedaya, who chews up every scene he's in as Julian Marty, an oily, vindictive man who isn't afraid to get his own hands dirty. Hedaya is an interesting casting choice, as his physicality seems to lend itself more towards East Coast gangster pictures instead of cowboy neo-noirs, but his casting here echoes the fish-out-of-water sentiments no doubt felt by his directors, a pair of Jewish filmmakers from Minnesota immersing themselves in the country-western landscape of deep Texas.
I hope your wife really loves you, because for the next 5 weeks, you can't even wipe your own goddamn hat.
As Visser, the film's chief antagonist, the aforementioned Wall strikes at once both a formidable and genial presence. He's clearly having the time of his life with his jolly, plump cowboy shtick, a characterization that's rendered chilling by his relentless malevolence in the third act. There's a reason that Walsh is featured in the film's promotional material above everybody else. His performance sears its way into your brain. To create the film's uncompromising look and carefully balanced tone, the Coens turned to director of photography Barry Sonnenfeld, who would later go on to become a director in his own right. As the legend goes, Joel had met Sonnenfeld during a party, having hit it off quite nicely after discovering they were the only two Jewish people in attendance. Shooting on 35mm film, Sonnenfeld fills the 185:1 frame with warm, strong colors, inky blackness, the lurid glow of neon on a hot desert night, and shocking geysers of crimson blood. The Coens' knack for strong imagery is already apparent here, regularly showcasing memorable images that wordlessly reinforce the narrative themes, like the final shot showing Emmett's dying perspective of the underside of a bathroom sink, light streaming through bullet holes in the wall, or even pools of blood seeping up through a towel hastily thrown over the backseat of a car. For the most part, the Coens use classical camera movements like dollies and cranes to tell their story. However, these tried-and-true techniques are also used in some instances to convey their subtle sense of humor. One memorable instance finds a dolly shot moving across the top of the bar, towards a drunk man who has fallen asleep and threatens to block the camera's forward movement. Instead of cutting, the Coens simply pop the camera up over him and continue along as if nothing ever happened. This visual inventiveness extends to several creative transition shots, like the one where a camera swings around as McDormand goes from a standing position in the bar to her lying asleep in her bed several miles away, all captured within a single unbroken shot. Raimi's influence is even further felt in a handheld shot that races in on the characters at breakneck speed, a technique used quite extensively by Raimi himself in The Evil Dead. Beginning here with Blood Simple, the Coens also perform the editing themselves under a fictional pseudonym, Roderick James. It's a true testament to their utter mastery of the craft when they can perform the writing, directing, and cutting of a picture without compromising the quality of any part of the process. The score, composed by Carter Burwell in his first feature-length effort, is appropriately pulpy and lurid. An ominously spare piano theme is complemented by an electronic synth texture that buzzes with sharpness and malice, while also paying homage to the 70s slasher thriller sounds pioneered by the likes of John Carpenter.
Hey, Marty!
The exaggerated audio motif of a swirling ceiling fan gives the film's sonic landscape a rhythmically percussive flavor that draws out our sense of suspense and intrigue. An inspired mix of country, R&B, and Spanish folk music fills out Blood Simple's soundtrack, and reflects the diverse, multicultural landscape of rural Texas.
Hold it.
The Coens' lifelong fascination with the traditions of American music is modestly referenced for the first time here, with the Four Tops hit track It's the Same Old Song featuring prominently over several scenes. There's a few other classical Coen tropes, all of which are making their first appearance here.
The world is full of complainers. The fact is, nothing comes with a guarantee. Now, I don't care if you're the Pope of Rome, President of the United States, or Man of the Year. Something can all go wrong.
There's the moody prologue, set to long shots of the empty landscape, while a low-key voiceover in a strong regional dialect muses about the setting and the film's themes. Many Coen films start this way, a technique that's no doubt influenced by Billy Wilder's similar incorporation of the device throughout his own filmography.
In Paris, people eat better. And in Paris, people make love. Well, perhaps not better, but certainly more often.
Blood Simple also introduces the Coens' penchant for positioning their protagonists as middle-class men and women. Common folk who are able to provide a street-level view of the action and sit comfortably between the desperation of poverty and the complacency of wealth while observing and commenting on the absurdities of either station. This conceit manifests visually via the iconography of Americana. Blood Simple prominently features images of uniquely American brands like Converse sneakers, Miller High Life beer, and Cadillac cruisers. Despite the film's self-seriousness, the Coens indulge every opportunity to playfully subvert our genre expectations. The recurring image of fish rotting on a desk while hiding Visser's easily identifiable and forgotten lighter is about as literal as red herrings come. Blood Simple plays like an early version of the Coens' Oscar-winning masterpiece No Country for Old Men. Both films are sparse on dialogue and heavy on atmosphere.
Well, what?
What?
Some of Blood Simple's most memorable sequences, such as the infamous live burial scene, contain no dialogue whatsoever. Beyond the tone and the rural Texas setting, the similarities include the use of sound effects as a suspense-generating device, or the sudden, premature death of the male protagonist. Both are brooding crime dramas, although No Country for Old Men enjoys the benefits of nearly two decades of professional filmmaking experience and sells its seriousness quite readily. The grit of Blood Simple, on the other hand, feels slightly forced, almost overcompensatory. That being said, Blood Simple is still an extremely effective thriller and a striking debut film, made all the more special by the careers that the Coens have cultivated for themselves in the years since. The finished film was turned down by every major Hollywood studio, but it proved to be a big hit on the festival circuit, taking home the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance and winning Best Director and Best Male Lead at the Independent Spirit Awards. After its selection into the New York Film Festival, the Coens inked a deal with Circle Films to distribute the film around the U.S. The small box office returns were to be expected, but the Coens most likely did not anticipate how much the film would resonate with critics. Blood Simple has enjoyed a particularly healthy aftermarket life, with a retooled director's cut premiering at the 1998 Austin Film Festival to wide acclaim, and a full restoration being performed in 2015. Typical of the Coens' preternatural ability to defy expectation, their director's cut actually clocks in at 3 minutes shorter than the original version, thanks to tighter edits and some shots that were dropped altogether. With Blood Simple, the Coens had established themselves as a formidable new force in the realm of independent cinema.
Thank you for listening to the Director Series. For a deeper dive into your favorite filmmakers, go to www.directorseries.net. The Director Series is made possible in large part by our generous supporters on Patreon. Please visit us at patreon.com/directorseries to see how your contribution enables the continued production of video essays and text articles on your favorite contemporary and classic film directors. Thank you.